Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, trusted for remodeling projects big and small. Ideas at callmosby.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Monday, November 17th. I'm Abby Larico. Seven schools in the St. Louis Public School District have been closed for 6 months now after being damaged in the May 16th tornado.
Tried our best to get some things mitigated, but however, it was just temporary measures at the time, so water is still able to come through the building for intrusion.
St. Louis Public Radio's Hiba Ahmed got an exclusive tour of some of the school buildings to help shed light on their future. That's coming up after this news on The Gateway. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen approved a nearly $14 million funding package for winter sheltering and housing aid to people affected by the May tornado. St. Louis Public Radio's Kayvon Mansouri has more.
The three bills city officials call a historic investment into winter sheltering operations in St. Louis received unanimous approval from the board. That comes after a two-week fast-tracking of the legislation. The roughly $14 million comes from a mixture of interest money from Ram Settlement Funds and a one-time dip into the city's general reserve. That money will fund winter-related emergency housing, extended hours at shelters, and provide additional money to the city's ailing-impacted tenant fund that was intended to aid tenants displaced by the tornado. Mayor Kara Spencer said in late October, the city expects increased need this winter due to the housing crisis in North St. Louis caused by the tornado's destruction. I'm Kayvon Mansouri, St. Louis Public Radio.
St. Louis officials are moving forward with a plan to ask voters to renew the city's earnings tax in an April ballot question. The Board of Aldermen held a first reading of the bill that calls for the vote. St. Louis collects a 1% tax on earned income for anyone who works or lives in the city. That tax generated roughly 36% of the city's general budget, roughly $209 million, last year. It pays for services like the police and fire departments and garbage collection. Revenue from the earnings tax fell by nearly 5% this year, but was offset by other income in the city. The board will discuss the matter further in coming weeks. The chairwoman of the St. Louis County Council says policymakers will have to make tough decisions to deal with a dire budgetary situation. The county is facing an $80 million budget hole, and St. Louis County Executive Sam Page wants to use a combination of budgetary reserves and St. Louis Rams settlement money to fill the gap. Councilwoman Rita Days, though, says she's not a fan of Page's idea.
I don't think it's wise to spend one-time funding for ongoing services. What will we do next year? We still have the same issue, and so that addressing that in that way will not help.
Page is also proposing having county voters decide on whether to adopt a use tax on online sales. You can listen to more of Councilwoman Day's Politically Speaking Hour interview at stlpr.org or wherever you find your podcasts. The increased immigration enforcement recently seen in Chicago is now in downstate Illinois. That's according to the congresswoman who represents much of the Metro East and local organizations that work with immigrants. St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer reports.
Democrat Nikki Budzinski says her office is hearing reports of increased ICE activity across the district in places like Belleville and Granite City. And that's led to fear in immigrant communities. The small Metro East village of Fairmont City is more than 70% Hispanic. Mayor Michael Suarez says his constituents are afraid to take their kids to school and go to the grocery store.
Unfortunately, it seems to be working. We haven't had a heavy presence, but the fear is there as if they're there every day.
In response, Budzinski says her office can help with casework, and they've been trying to educate immigrants on their rights. However, she says the Department of Homeland Security hasn't been transparent, which is incredibly frustrating. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
A recent law change in Illinois removes the requirement for people to publish their intent to change their name. That's a historic requirement in many states that Illinois did away with in the spring. Land of Lincoln Legal Aid has been hosting clinics to provide assistance with the name change process and cover the costs for low-income individuals across the state. Sarah Ramsey is the pro bono manager at the group's East St. Louis office. She says the law change was necessary to protect people who are evading domestic abuse or others looking to affirm their gender identity.
I think names hold power, and to reclaim your power by changing your name is a very important step in this process for a lot of our clients.
The new law also reduces the time someone must live in the state before applying for a name change from 6 months to 3. During the federal government shutdown, many people who rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program dealt with an emotional roller coaster as they waited for their benefits. But as St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fentum reports, researchers find people have a difficult time accessing federal benefits even when the government is open.
Researchers at Washington University surveyed low-wage workers on SNAP and Medicaid and asked what barriers they faced to getting and keeping coverage. Close to one-third of recipients reported uncertainty about eligibility. They also reported issues providing documentation. Study author Stephen Roll says burdens can limit programs' reach among the groups that rely on them the most.
Everyone knows there's red tape and that there's hassle and that there are stressors involved in enrolling in these public benefits programs. But what we didn't know is all the ways these sort of manifest in people's lives.
Roll thinks governments should make applications shorter and easier to understand and use internet and mobile-based systems instead of mailed documents to ease burdens on recipients. I'm Sarah Fentum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Over the weekend, St. Louis University's men's soccer team hoisted the Atlantic 10 Conference Trophy. The Billikens defeated Dayton University yesterday in a 5-4 penalty shootout at SLU's Herman Stadium to win the conference title. The win earns them an automatic bid to the NCAA Division I Men's Soccer Championship Tournament. The playoff matchups will be announced today at noon. St. Louis Public Schools closed 7 of its buildings and relocated nearly 2,000 students after the May 16th tornado. That was 6 months ago. As weeks of displaced students turned into months, community members began to wonder whether the schools would ever reopen. St. Louis Public Radio's Hiba Ahmed toured some of the schools and has this report.
On a cloudy day earlier this month, Director of Facilities Anthony Graffenried takes us through Sumner High School.
Down this way is where you'll see a lot of the damages due to, you know, water intrusion, the roof. So be careful coming in this. You'll see how the floor is buckling.
The sound of our footsteps echoes through the school's grand halls as we walk towards the west end of the building.
Is this water stains that are
on
the floor?
Yes, absolutely.
So how did the water end up in here?
Well, of course, from the tornado, blew off portions of the roof. Tried our best to get some things mitigated, but however, it was just temporary measures at the time, so water is still able to come through the building for intrusion.
As we make our way upstairs, we're reminded that this historic building was home to over 300 students.
Still got classes going. The bells are still,
We wander into what looks like an art classroom. There's dust from collapsed ceilings and chipped paint all over the students' desks. But Graffenried looks past the damage and sees the work left behind by students.
Some good work from my scholars. Again, we just want to get them back to their homes so they can get back to doing this good work.
The district says it's committed to reopening the storm-damaged buildings. Repairs on a handful of schools, including Sumner, won't be complete until December 2026. And that's just too late for Sumner student Shania and her mother, Ashley Burles.
What grade? Mm-hmm. 12th.
12th?
Yeah.
Your last year and Sumner closed.
Yeah, this is horrible. Like, I don't know, like, how to feel.
And she's a kid that loves to go to school. My baby grades are perfect. And she want to go to school, but it's hard to, like, get up and go back and forth between, you know, switching schools and the buses.
But some schools, like Washington Montessori Elementary, Yateman Lydell Middle, and Beaumont High could reopen as early as January.
All right. Now we're in Washington Montessori. Still was in the path of the tornado. As we, like, look outside, there's still homes that are badly damaged. The vacant school.
School, you can see the damage to the school across one of the vacant schools. Yeah, damaged pretty bad.
The school is in the Fountain Park neighborhood, and it sits across from the Euclid School, which was closed by the district in 2007. It has a caved-in roof and extensive exterior damage. Washington Montessori looks practically untouched in comparison. Dozens of small windows have been replaced and patches have been made to the roof.
And I mean, the classroom looks great.
No, absolutely.
This
absolutely
looks like it's ready to welcome back students.
And I think when the students do come back, they'll be pleased and happy. So, no, absolutely.
The district estimates that the repairs will cost somewhere between $5 to $15 million, but Graffenreid is confident the work will get done.
It's a lot of people that take a lot of pride in not only the building, it's just our scholars. And again, our goal is to make sure that we shape the future, and we know that starts with our scholars. So in the operations facilities team, our goal is always making sure that the buildings are conducive for learning.
The school board is expected to approve the district's plans to reopen schools in December in hopes of bringing a sense of stability back to thousands of students' lives. I'm Hiba Ahmed, St. Louis Public Radio.
We have some photos of the damaged schools at stlpr.org from our Kate Grumke and Brian Munoz. Our Brian Moline edited that piece. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. The music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.